How do we tune in to our duty as human beings? What is baseline our duty as human beings? Hey y'all, I'm Reese and welcome to Making Meaning. Podcast by the Cohere Collective, here to help guide you along your path to make meaning in a way that makes sense for you. Today, I am joined by author and Dharmacharya, Cynthia Jers. I believe I am saying Dharmacharya correct. I hope I am saying it correctly. But Cynthia has been a longtime student of Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh, and the presence that she has is truly Zen, and you can feel the energy even through our conversation virtually, and I hope you can feel that as you listen today as well. Cynthia also has recently published her book, Summoned by the Earth, which talks about our duty as human beings, how we are being called to reconcile our relationship with Mother Gaia, with each other, in the natural order of the way that Mother Gaia and the energy of life wants to flow. We don't know exactly what that looks like yet. We don't know what it's supposed to look like. But I think part of this call, part of this summon that Cynthia speaks to in her book is in creating what that looks like in unity with the earth, with nature, with the life force energy that we are all an integral part of. I so deeply enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you will as well. But before we jump in, as always, let's take a deep breath. And get started. Cynthia, thank you so very much for joining me today, being here and sharing space with me. I'm very excited to be having this conversation with you.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, my first question that I always like to ask is, what are you grateful for right now?
That's a good question. I'm grateful for the beauty of this fall in northern New Mexico, where I live. The colors of the leaves on the mountain are changing, and the light is so crisp and clear, and all the harvest is coming in from the garden. I feel very grateful for, well, you know, the most recent hurricane, Milton. It did its damage. But it might not have been quite as bad as everybody thought. So that was something to be grateful for all the people who are helping in North Carolina and Tennessee and the other areas that were hit by Helene, you know, and just all those around the world who are doing their part to make this world a better place. Thanks.
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that to the forefront of the conversation. That was something that I was considering in entering this conversation with you, and the importance of sacred activism and climate considerations really is a very big part of that. And I think we've seen it consistently, but arguably with this new round of hurricanes now more than ever. And I think it's important to make sure we're holding space for those that are both being affected by and doing the work to help. So thank you for bringing that. My second question is, what is your story? I know that is a large question, and you have actually written most of it down. So a lot of our listeners will be able to go check out Summoned by the Earth, which is the book that Cynthia has written, that is a quite beautiful book about her journey into becoming a sacred activist and really showing up in a sanctified and aligned way to try and make the world a better and more healthy place. So that will be in the description for anyone that is curious about checking out Summoned by the Earth. But
anything that you're called to share about your story right now. I would absolutely love to hear.
Well, thank you. It's why I wrote the book, because it's kind of a long story, and it's a very kind of epic, mythic story too. And I hope that people will pick up the book, because there's a lot in it. Besides my own personal story, there's a lot in it about forming a relationship with the earth and in these times, and responding to our own inner calling, you know, a sense of purpose around doing what is ours to do, right?
Yes.
But I guess where the book begins and where this conversation might want to begin is back in 1990, when I met this 106-year-old Lama living in a cave in a remote part of Nepal, the proverbial old wise man in the cave. And I realized, you know, as I was walking up the path to meet him, that I should come up with a question that was meaningful, not just to me, but to others who would never have such a remarkable opportunity. I mean, I didn't really even realize what I was getting myself into when this journey began, but I had been practicing in both the Tibetan and the Zen traditions of Buddhism, and then found myself on this path. And the question that I came up with was, what can we do to bring healing and protection to the earth? Because even back then, I was, and many of us were, beginning to recognize the signs, you know, that the balance of life on earth in relationship to nature was, you know, becoming more and more imbalanced, more and more threatened. So that was really what was on my heart and in my mind. And that's how the book begins and where my life has taken me since asking that question. All around the world.
Yeah. No, it's really such a beautiful place to start. But if you don't mind, I would like to go back even further and ask you, how were you first introduced to the Tibetan and Zen traditions? And what drew you to those sects of Buddhism particularly, but it's a really beautiful combination.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I was always searching, you know. As a young person, we were not particularly churchgoers, and my parents always said, you're free to go and do whatever you want, you know, but they were more, I guess you would say, agnostic. But my mother really had a connection to the earth, to nature, to the flowers and the beautiful, you know, land, and the magic of the land. And I absorbed that. My dad did too, but you know, we weren't particularly spiritual, and I hungered for that. And so I was drawn to Buddhism pretty early on. I kind of dabbled in this and that. And then when I started to become exposed to Buddhism, I liked it because it didn't actually ask you to believe in an external God. It was really pointing to our own, what is called our own Buddha nature, which is in all of us. It's our own wisdom, our own compassion, our own awakened heart and mind, that the Buddha himself, which the word Buddha just means awakened one. He was historically known as Shakyamuni, Buddha Gautama Shakyamuni. But Buddha nature, this awakened nature, is in every single one of us. So the practice of meditation is really to come into an experience of that, which is always here. It's not out there. And I think that's really powerful and beautiful and, you know, can be meaningful to everyone, no matter what religion they're coming from. And one of my great teachers is Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Vietnamese Zen master who always talked about, you know, we need to not leave our root traditions behind to become a Buddhist, but to, you know, incorporate the teachings of Buddhism in our own way. So I love that. And he also, as an early teacher of mine, talked a lot about engaged Buddhism, which is another word in a way for sacred activism. Mm. And I like that very much. And I, you know, he really encouraged his students to engage their practice in a way that is meaningful to others, you know, that is in a way to make a difference in the world. Because, you know, we want to, you start to awaken a little bit and you realize the suffering that people and animals and plants and trees and oceans and everything else is going through, you know, needs to be healed. And we can each contribute something to that process. And, but we need to engage it, you know, and not turn away. So I love that. And that's kind of how it all began and where it all led.
Absolutely. No, I love that too. And I think that that is something that when I similarly was, you know, searching and really looking for these kind of spiritual avenues to explore meaning and purpose, was similarly drawn to the Buddhist tradition in the way that it does allow kind of a marriage between those practices and just about anything else you could possibly imagine, because it is going back to the inner work, which I really, really find beautiful. And added layer to this, being raised in Texas, a very southern United States place, most people are Southern Baptist and Christian of some sort, being able to engage with people from a place of loving kindness and compassion is a universal good, right? And so being able to marry that with other...
I missed you. That's all right. You cut out on me there for a few minutes.
Okay. So sorry about that.
Okay. You were saying about Southern Baptist Christian, yes. Texas.
Yes.
Right.
But just being able to marry Buddhism into this tradition was a very accessible way for me to first start exploring these things. Mm. But also a really beautiful entry point to be able to see, you know, the overlaps between prayer and meditation and the Christian idea of we are all children of God and He is within all of us is very similar to some of these Buddhist ideals. I tend to be a little bit partial to the Buddhist languaging of Buddha nature is within all of us, being ungendered and more universal, but I really appreciate your nod to this marriage with other traditions, because that is a very special part of Buddhism. Yeah. In acknowledging the Buddha nature within all of us and this internal work that is always accessible internal to us, how do you see that internal work matching up with this connection to the broader world around us? Because of course, there's a huge connection there. And I do think that a lot of people find accessibility to this internal work when we are in nature and when we are connected to the earth. What do you think that connective thread is?
Well, I really have come to have my own experience and believe very deeply that we're not separate from the earth. We're not separate from the web of life. We're part of it. And so everything that happens and grows and lives on the body of Mother Earth is alive, and we're part of that living thread. So there is no separation. And it's important that we understand that and experience it, because we have our own power to affect that web of life very directly in how we live our lives, and realize that, you know, what goes out from our hearts, you know, is affecting everything. And so accessing that is, you know, happens in different ways. Meditation is a great way to access it, but so is going out and putting your back against a tree or, your toes in the ocean, or, you know, listening to the sound of the birds, and just stopping for a minute to kind of disengage from the incessant activity and busyness and messaging from the dominant culture that tells us what we're supposed to do and how to be, that disconnects us from our own true nature, you know? Mm-hmm. And our own true nature is going to express itself differently for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful thing. The diversity of life on Earth is such a magnificent display, you know? And so I don't know, I'm kind of riffing on whatever it was you asked. More to where you wanted to go with that?
No, that was a perfect riffing. And I certainly, questions are just there to hear your thoughts, not for perfect answers by any means. But absolutely, I think I hear this interconnectedness. And I'm glad that you brought up the kind of incessant hustle and bustle of particularly Western culture, but in the United States as well. Mm-hmm. To get extremely practical with it, what are some of your recommendations and or personal practices to, in addition to meditation and, you know, getting out into nature, that you integrate to get in touch with this true nature in the multiplicitous sense of the word?
Yeah. Well, I, you know, one of the most immediate ways is to remember to breathe with awareness. So we, you know, we're constantly breathing, right? But we're not necessarily breathing with awareness. But the moment we turn our attention to our own breath, just going through life, you know, walking from one room to the next, or washing the dishes, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, to come back to the breath is a way to, first of all, like connect the body and the mind through the breath. It's a way of conspiring with Mother Earth, literally, because this, you know, you start to realize, oh my goodness, this is the life force of the planet flowing through me, keeping me alive and contributing to the life force of all beings and the trees and everything else, right? So, and then beyond that, when we can stop the busy mind for a few minutes even, and this doesn't even have to take the term meditation, but if we can return to the breath and just have like a little time out, you know, to just do nothing else or think about nothing else other than just the breathing in and the breathing out. Right there, everything settles down and we come back to our true self. In that moment when we allow ourselves to not be obsessing about the things that we're usually preoccupied with. And just like time out, I'm just going to come back to my breath. Oh yeah. And then it's like this renewal. And if you can extend that a little bit, suddenly things start to get a little bit more clear. You know, it's like, you know, oh, that is just a waste of time. That over there is what's really calling. And, you know, you just kind of keep coming back. So that's a big practice for me, you know, throughout the day. And just remembering. So, you know, I love to go to sacred places in the world, places that carry an energy of maybe in this conversation you could say awakening, places that are sacred for whatever that means to you. You know, maybe it's a cathedral, maybe it's a rock circle, you know, in some sacred circle in the Celtic world, you know, maybe it's a Buddhist site or something. Maybe it's a place where people make offerings, you know, remember the Native America, you know, people go and they make offerings and they make a connection to the ancestors, to the land, to the great, you know, great spirit, or, you know, are kind of catalyzed in some of these places to remember God, or, you know, there's so many forms.
Right. So many forms. Right.
We lose track of that, you know, so it's important to kind of pilgrimage to some of those places, and everywhere we live in the world, we can find them. We don't have to get on an airplane necessarily to find them.
Sure. And I do think a lot of the time, why we feel this call to get on an airplane or a boat or something to go find these places is in the ritual of travel, making that experience feel more sanctified and sacred. But a big question for me is how to create these places for myself in a very accessible way to still tap into that. So I suppose my question for you is, what do you think it is about these spaces that makes them sacred in the way that allows this remembrance when people tap into that space? And is there a way to create that space for ourselves?
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. You know, like if you can create a little altar, you know, like a little place in your home where you place the things that inspire you, you know, maybe it's a photograph or a picture of a place that you've been to, or maybe a teacher that you love, or your ancestors who inspire you too, or a statue or a candle and some, you know, incense, flowers, beautiful flowers, you know, those kind of things. And then, you know, you pick up, chances are you pick up something everywhere you go, you know, whether it's a shell on the sand or, you know, a flower in the garden, and then, you know, you bring it back to that little altar in your home. And then, you know, you take your seat, you make a comfortable spot for yourself to return to on a regular basis. And that is a way of connecting to that part of ourselves, which in those sacred places, one of the things that you can just bet has been happening over centuries is the lighting of the candles, the singing of the sacred songs, the drumming of the invitation to the ancestors to come, you know, and it's in the rocks, it's in the land. You can feel it when you walk in, or the temples or whatever we're talking about, you know. So reclaiming that, you know, just knowing that the reason that these places feel so strong is because of what's been done there over centuries, you know. And so when we do that and repeatedly in our own homes with a certain place, like I'm looking straight ahead, I have my altar there, and it speaks to me, you know, and people come into the room and they go, oh yeah, wow, okay. You know, so that's another way of supporting ourselves to go back to, you know, taking another breath and stopping for a minute and just acknowledging that sacred place within us.
That's beautiful. And I do think there is something to these physical places holding the energy of tradition and ritual and repetition that, I mean, we have all experienced the feeling of going into a beautiful church, right? And it's, whether it's of our tradition or not, and you walk in and it's like, there's powerful energy there. Absolutely. With that, one word that you've been using that I think is a really beautiful word choice and ties us in a little bit to where I always like to start talking about books, which is the title, because I think titles are very important and the words we choose are very important. You've been using the word invitation, and this invitation that we have to do this work. And in the title, the very first word is summoned by the earth, which feels related to invitation to me in some ways. But where an invitation is a opening.
Yeah.
Being summoned is a calling, almost more obligatory in certain ways. Why the word summoned, and what did being summoned feel like for you?
Wow. Wonderful observation, Reese. And yeah, you know, I think we're all, you know, if we get quiet enough, we can all experience that little quiet voice within that's going, you here, you there, you know, and we ignore it because we think we need to be doing something else, or we're supposed to be like this, you know, and that little voice is like the most important voice to listen to. Mm-hmm. It's actually not so little. Once
right.
you start listening. So in my case, you know, I'm kind of stumbling along. I mean, I was always searching and everything, but I was stumbling along in my life, wondering what to do with myself, as so many of us are for such a long time. And we're lucky yes. if we, you know, find it. But when I landed that question for the old llama in the cave, I realized that was my life's guiding question. And, I had already, as I said, I had already been exposed to, Buddhism. And so let's just back up for a minute, because in the story of the Buddha's life, when he was sitting, you know, he was searching and searching and practicing and doing all of this, learning so many things. And then all of a sudden it was just like, I got to sit down. And he stopped, and he was practically starving to death because he'd been such a renunciate. But anyway, he started to recover, and there was a young girl who helped him by feeding him and kind of making him comfortable. And he sat under the tree, this tree where he was, where he stopped. And then his process of awakening began. And in the process of that awakening, what did he do but touch the earth to witness this process going on inside of himself? Because it was so much bigger than him. And he needed some sort of a witness, and maybe even some sort of stabilization in that incredible process of, you know, releasing himself into something so much larger. Awakening, you know. And so he touched the earth and summoned the earth to witness what was happening to him. In my book, I actually retell that story as if the Buddha were a woman, because I never expected to do that, but I realized that as a woman, I had been hungering for, you know, a way to identify with the Buddha that didn't involve having to change my own identity from one gender to another, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so I rewrote it as if the Buddha were a woman, not to say the Buddha should be a woman, but because I, you know, I totally respect and bow and honor the Buddha. But as a woman, it's helpful to have feminine forms that we can identify with. So anyway, that aside, I realized as I was going around the world with the practice I received from the old llama in the cave, which is a practice of working with what are called earth treasure vases, which are little clay pots filled with offerings intended to bring healing to a place where they're planted in the ground. And, you know, the rational mind kind of goes, what'd you say? You know, really? That helps? You know, like, okay. I decided I had to try everything, you know, and that was what was coming to me. And it's just been amazing to see the kinds of things that have arisen in the places that I've gone. But in the course of carrying that out, I had to learn to listen to the earth, because the need for healing and protection is so overwhelming. You know, it's like, where in the world do we go? Well, we have to go everywhere. We have to kind of try everything. And So I began to really listen to the earth as my guide, as my teacher, as my informant, you know, on where the path was going to go next. And so I realized when I took one of the treasure vases to Australia, I was out back in the bush. It was this amazing moment. And I realized that I had been summoned by the earth to do this in these times. And so I'm always inviting people, inviting, not necessarily summoning, but there is a sense of like the times that we're living in are summoning us to wake up now, you know, but the invitation is really to touch the earth in our lives and to listen to what this incredible teacher who embodies just everything that is alive in the world is trying to tell us. And so summoned, being summoned, summoning, responding to the summons, not just turning away and going, oh, well, that's for somebody else. Because we're all being invited to come into this relationship. That's my feeling, is that in these times, there's kind of no escape. We're all in it together.
Absolutely. Well, and I think what you said earlier too about all of us having this true nature, call it Buddha nature, true nature within us, it is difficult to imagine that we would not be in something like this together. And that I think one of the unifying forces of any religious system, spiritual system, philosophy system is that we are all connected in some way. And to turn away from that feels deeply antithetical to the human experience to me. So I do think that that's really beautiful in that way, that we can also, in the way all of us are invited to do this work, the difference in feeling summoned to certain things and certain dimensions of that work, I think is really beautiful, the way slightly different approaches can contribute to the broader conversation around exactly what you're talking about. Talk to me more about these earth treasure vases. It is something you discuss a bit in the book, but I am just so fascinated by this beautiful ritual. And it was something I had not come across until reading your book. And I really, really loved the, I've used this word a lot, but the ritual behind it. That is something about religious systems that I think really speaks to me, is the repetition and pattern. And that being a piece of this ritual, I think is really beautiful. I would love if we just could talk a little bit about that.
Of course. Yeah, it's an old tradition. It comes from the Tibetan Buddhist culture. Or spiritual tradition. And it originated in the 8th century when the historical figure called Padmasambhava brought Buddhism to Tibet from India. And in the course of his life, he was quite a prophet, really. And he foresaw that there would be times of degradation on the planet in times to come. And so he brought forward a practice that could be useful in times ahead. And so the practice of the earth treasure vases was discovered or rediscovered in the kind of like when the Industrial Revolution started to come into the world and, you know, things began to go down this path that is now has created such imbalance in the world. And so the practice involves these little clay pots that are, in our case, the clay was mixed with all kinds of sacred substances by the lamas who made them for us in Nepal, and then blessed. And traditionally, the monks in the monasteries and stuff would fill them with specific offerings, really dedicated to restoring balance and enhancing the environment and, you know, bringing prosperity and those kinds of things. But in our case, because they had to travel all around the world, they gave them to us empty, but they blessed them and filled them with all kinds of these potent medicines into the clay. And then they gave them to us to then fill with offerings that are meaningful to ourselves and to the cultures and places where they were to go. And so that has been the practice, is taking them around the world to all kinds of places where healing and protection is called for. And of course, that's everywhere. And that takes many different forms, from, you know, war zones to ecosystems to pandemics to inner cities and mountaintops and rivers and everything in between. So we have been working with them now for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I have. And there's now a global community called the Gaia Mandala Global Healing Community that is, I like to say, stewarding these little clay vessels, holy vessels, around the world to places where this is called for. And we always make relations with the elders of the mm-hmm. lands, traditional indigenous peoples, and ask for their blessing and participation, because we don't want to assume that this is something that, you know, we have some answer, or, you know, this is good. I mean, it is good, but, you know, you have to be sensitive to not imposing anything on anyone. And so that's become a big part of the practice. And, you know, over the years, we've identified some of the deepest core wounds, you know, in the world that are contributing to the imbalances that we're experiencing today. And so the little vessels, when you take them into ritual ceremony, it involves inviting people into, I'm using that word a lot myself today, into a meditation, which we do actually every full moon online. We do a virtual meditation on Zoom that anybody can join. It's free of charge. And but we do that in the places that we go as well, in person, and then send the little clay pot around the circle to invite people to put their own prayers or offerings into it. And the little vessels really serve as kind of like ambassadors, you know, to open us to a chance to give what we love, to offer something we care about, you know, to the lands that we want to see protected and brought healing to. So it's a way of making that connection.
Mm.
And then you're just amazed at what starts to happen, you know, because people that connect with their own motivation to be of benefit, and that gets poured into these little clay pots, and then they're planted like a seed in the ground, you know, and then we water them with our intentions and with our continued vows, really, you know, to engage. And and then, you know, you realize at a certain point, well, actually, I'm a holy vessel. It's not just the little clay pot that I'm taking out there. It's like I have something to give, to offer. Yeah.
Wow. So that's it is just so beautiful. And I do love this relationship between the human body as a vessel and the earth treasure vases as vessels, and the idea of kind of nurturing both of these things, and the same way that we create a vow to these promises in that we're planting into the physical earth, what vows do we make with ourselves, knowingly or unknowingly, that we are watering with this energy, and being very intentional with how we do that for ourselves too.
Yeah.
One thing that something you mentioned really brought up for me, which is a question that I've actually been struggling with for a while now personally, is this idea of imposing, right? And entering into these communities and, you know, very wisely, you shared, we do not want to impose. We want to do this with the blessing and in communion with the people of these places, of the physical space, but also the tradition. And in the process of awakening and becoming more knowledgeable about these things, I similarly have this feeling of not wanting to impose on anyone's traditions, but I do think that sometimes inevitably there tends to be a hierarchy that can be created in, well, I am awakened and I am further along in this practice than someone else may be. And I don't really agree with the idea that one can be necessarily more awakened than the other. However, that is very much kind of, I remember what it felt like before having been introduced to some of these concepts and now starting to try and integrate them into my life. So I would love to hear your thoughts on this kind of balance between the growth that we experience personally without it bringing a sense of superiority.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good you brought that up. I'm so with you on that, because I feel like one of the, I mentioned earlier, one of the idea of core wounds, I think the hierarchical power over superiority dynamic that is operating in the world so across the, so many platforms, right? Whether it's political or spiritual or educational or, you know, whatever, familial.
Yeah.
You know, that dynamic is like a death threat, really, to our creative blossoming as individuals. And so it's also killing the planet.
Yeah.
Because we're operating inside of this power over oppression dynamic that is, you know, just taking advantage of the living life force of Mother Earth. And so, and that is within us as well. So, you know, when we impose something on anybody, we are taking power over them. And so, yes, we might have an incredible experience of some, you know, beautiful thing that we want to share that is really making a difference in our lives, you know, and that's a wonderful thing. And we, you know, want to do that in a way that is allowing others to come to that for themselves in their own way. How you come to it is going to be different than how I come to it, you know? And so a practice and a tradition and a way of being that is feeding that spirit in the world without imposing it on others or thinking this is the right way and what this is the wrong way and I have the answers and you don't. It's so damaging, you know. It's just so damaging to the incredible diversity of life on Earth, you know? Yeah. So there's all these facets. You know, it's like the planet is just this jewel in space, and each one of us is a little facet of that jewel. And together we have incredible, you know, we just embody such beauty. And I celebrate that. So you know, I think it's important for us to come back to our true self over and over again. You know, that's another little ritual we can do is just, you know, take another breath, come back. What is my truth? You know, not the truth that I'm told I should be like that, you know, but
yes,
it takes courage. I mean, and that's where community comes in, is like, when I was talking about the little earth treasure vase going around the circle, you know, and we witness each other offering our deep prayers and, you know, making those kinds of vows and commitments, you know, it's so powerful to be witnessed by someone. else other than our own self. You know, it's like we get so isolated. It's another dynamic that's happening in the world today that's so, you know, debilitating, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I absolutely. And I do think that truly witnessing someone and sharing space in that individual's truth is such a beautiful gift. And I can recall very specific moments where I have felt that in communion with another person. And while there is, of course, this certain fundamental nature of the human being that is to exist within our own brains, our own minds, our own perspective, to attempt to break that down and to be in that space with someone else is such a beautiful gift. Oh, and
we live for that, right?
Yeah. I mean, that is part of why I love this, right? Is that it feels like we're trying to go to that place. Absolutely. When you feel that connection with another human being, well, perhaps I'm about to answer my own question, because I was going to say, how do you then tie that back into this sacred activism work? But I think it goes back to what you said at the very beginning of the podcast. Correct me if I'm wrong, or if you have more thoughts about this, please. But that energy is within all of us. And so that in communing with nature, can we not achieve that same sense in communing with other?
There you go. Yeah. We can awaken that with each other when we touch that place of honesty and truth and transparency, you know, vulnerability. Those are qualities that get awakened when we stop just, you know, layering on all the shoulds in our lives and pounding the pavement and doing all of that. You know, we numb ourselves so much. Mm-hmm. But when we open and support each other in opening, there it all is, you know. And so that I love the earth as a teacher, because nature is such a teacher, and then it reflects back to us our own nature. And that's so often what we are overriding. Boring. And then we feel sick and we wonder, oh, well, why am I hurting like this? Well, you weren't listening to your own nature that told you, maybe I need to like take a nap right now, or go for a walk and move my body, or, you know, those kinds of things. So
absolutely. Well, and having some grace with yourself as we go about doing that and learning that too, which I think takes us into the subtitle of the book, which I do think is arguably the main thesis of the book, which is becoming a holy vessel for healing our world. And of course, ties into this work of the earth treasure vases. Wanted to make sure I got the wording right there. And kind of mirroring that process for ourselves. But
yeah,
the way we treat ourselves is so often not the way we would treat sacred objects. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a bit about this becoming of a holy vessel within ourselves. And of course, you've written a whole book on this. So if anyone would like to dive any deeper into this, please check out the book. But what would be your entree into becoming a holy vessel?
Well, I think you sort of were going there, acknowledging how hard it is for us to stay connected to and treat ourselves as a holy object, you know, a holy vessel, because of how deeply the dominant culture tells us we have to be different than that, or we're not holy, or we're not sacred, you know, and we should ignore those things. And we do, and we go through our whole lives sometimes ignoring those parts of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's just tragedy, you know. And so to shift that way of living and being, and slowly, you know, it usually doesn't happen overnight, but shifting that way of being into really regarding each one of us as sacred and holy, you know, like with this Buddha nature, or, you know, that we are worth everything. Your gift is contributing so much to the world, even if it's just a little, you know, a few people here and there, or a few animals here and there, or whatever it is, you know, that's good. And that's enough. And then, you know, you start to kind of feel the wind at your back when you engage, right? And so then you realize, oh, well, I got to take care of myself, because this is really fun. This is really good. This is what I want to be doing with my life. And, you know, the more you take care, the more energy you have, the more you can realize your dreams. And then, you know, you give it and you see what happens when you give that. When you're just giving, you know, the old story, you know, it's just, it doesn't go very far, because it's just reproducing the same old patterns of habits that have been so destructive. And so, you know, but if you start to feed this other spirit in yourself, the holy vessel part, then it starts to kind of take on a life of its own, and things become a lot less difficult. Don't you find?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. One thing that I have really been, it's been kind of a mantra for me recently. And anytime I have a mantra for myself, I find myself called to share it, because of course it's always front of mind. But it has been, I am worth my dreams and passions. And as you said, we are worth everything. It gave me goosebumps. But also, the world is worth me following those dreams and passions as well. In that, I do believe that that is the greatest gift we can offer, is when we lean into that summoning, into that call, you feel the wind at your back, but also the impact you create feels so aligned. And I think that it allows the courage is but embracing fear, feeling the fear and doing it anyways. And I think reminding myself that the world is worth me overcoming that fear makes it not easier, but much more worthwhile to lean in.
Yeah. That little edge where the fear is often a sign that that's where I need to go. You know, like, uh-oh, you know, what's that going to be? But then, you know, if you like adventure, it really helps, because, you know, you don't know what's around the corner, and that can be a wonderful surprise. But also, you know, I feel like the world and the earth, as I've said over and over now, is it a kind of a turning point, you know? It's like, do we value life on earth? Excuse me. If we do, then we're going to do what you just said. Because otherwise we could be in for a lot of loss of life. You know, it's kind of down to the wire. And, but each of us has a role to play, and that's so exciting.
I completely agree. It's so energizing, in that, in both dimensions of the, we are down to the wire, we must, but also exciting in that we can. It is this twofold kind of indictment, I suppose. And one thing that you just said with the fear is that that is oftentimes where you should go. It may be, I want to say it's actually Ram Dass, but it may actually be Thich Nhat Hanh, or maybe Alan Watts, one of these great thought leaders, has a quote that is, where your fear is, there your path is. And I just think that is such a fabulous reminder, as we are seeing these things that I think evoke a lot of fear, and that can oftentimes make us want to crawl back into our shell and find comfort and ease in that way. But that is but a band-aid of ease, not true comfort, right? What would you say in terms of really wanting to encourage people to become a holy vessel themselves, start taking steps towards all of the things that we've talked about. What is, in addition to reading the book, of course, your kind of advice, I suppose, and very practical next steps?
Well, you can also listen to the book, not just read it, if you're a listener. So I've enjoyed reading the book for the audiobook version. So that's a way we can connect. But apart from that, yes, you know, I think one of the really important things is finding community and finding others who can support us in making these kinds of changes, because it's difficult, you know, to change and transform our lives. And so finding that path for yourself, it takes some looking, it takes some adventuring. It might mean being, you know, courageous enough to stop doing whatever is, you know, you think is what you're supposed to do, but is actually keeping you from really realizing your true calling. So, you know, that process is a little tricky because it's scary, you know, and it means sometimes letting go of what is no longer serving and trusting that there is something so much larger than ourselves operating that is guiding us, you know. So starting with stopping, taking a breath, coming back to that true self, that true nature, going out to the oceanside or the mountaintop and just, you know, like inviting a relationship with the earth, with the guiding forces of our lives that we can't figure out from here.
Right.
Okay. So that's the downfall, you know, is when I think I have to figure it out for myself. So the connection with the community, whatever it is. And, you know, we offer a lot of various practices in the Gaia Mandala community. But, and I mentioned the full moon and all of that. Yes. And it's a beautiful way to connect with others. But, you know, being brave, standing up, going, you know what? It's time for me to have the courage to really walk my talk and face into or lean into, as you said, the true calling I feel in that deepest heart. So whatever we can do to, you know, feel that connection and then stand for it, you know, stand for life, stand for the goodness of our caring and our compassion, you know, our love. It's really all comes down to love.
Yeah.
What do you love? What do you care about? That's where you need to put your energy.
Yeah.
That's where you need to find the time to drop into that place and then allow, you know, slowly for that love to guide you. Not the anger and the hatred and the fear. We're building a new operating system here. So
yes, both on that personal, interpersonal level, but also broader economically, socially, governmentally, globally, right? Like these are all new systems.
Yeah. It's an exciting time and it's a challenging time, but, but what else is there? That's what life is for.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I do want to be mindful of our time. So I'll take us into my final few questions.
Okay.
One, in light of our conversation, which has just been so enlightening for me personally, and I'm sure it will be for our listeners as well, is there anything that we have not gotten to that you would like to touch on? Anything that we did talk about that you want to return to, emphasize, clarify? Anything else at all that you feel called to share?
Hmm. Thank you. I feel like this has been a wonderful conversation for me too, and I really appreciate how you have kind of directed us sort of in through the back door, so to speak. And I love that. And I feel like we've covered a lot of ground and gone very deeply, and I really appreciate it very much. So I guess the only thing I would say is if anyone wants to continue this conversation, you know, or go more deeply, to please come find me on GaiaMandala.net. And there's lots of other things that you'll find once you go there. But I hope we'll stay connected too, Reese. It's been really
absolutely
fun. Yeah,
absolutely, for me as well. And that link, as well as all of the others mentioned, will be in the show notes for listeners and watchers to access you and your beautiful work. Final question, just to put a little bow on our conversation. What is one word to describe how you're feeling right now?
Just so moved. I'm so touched. Moved. I can feel the emotion of that love and that caring rising up, you know, in my heart. And so it's a sign. It's a sign that we've touched something really real. And I appreciate it very much.
Same. Thank you very much, Cynthia. Thank you all so very much for being here today, and a huge thank you to Cynthia for her time, energy, and spirit during this episode. I so enjoyed talking to Cynthia, and my favorite podcast episodes are the ones where eventually you can just feel that you click in, and it usually happens with every guest at some point, but sometimes there is just that energy that happens and both parties can feel it, and you're really having a good, productive conversation as opposed to just an interview. Please subscribe to Making Meaning wherever you are listening today. Leave us a like, a review, a rating, a comment. Engaging with the post is the best way to spread the word. And share this episode with someone in your life that you think would resonate with it, that you think might learn something from it. It's really a great conversation starter for people in your life that you want to begin having more meaningful connections and conversations with. If you're curious about the Cohere Collective and the other work that we do, you can head on over to www.thecoherecollective.com, and you can follow us wherever you have social media at The Cohere Collective. You can also follow me on Instagram at Lillian Reese Brown, and all of Cynthia's information to follow her and find her work and find Summoned by the Earth will be linked in the episode description wherever you are listening or watching. A big thank you to Nicole Ostreicher for Making Meaning's art and podcast cover. You can find her on Instagram at Nicole O Creates or Nicole O Design. And a big thank you to Tristan Morgan for Making Meaning's theme music. You can find him on Instagram at Tristan Morgan. Right now, I am feeling... there is an immediate feeling that I'm feeling right now, and then a bigger picture feeling that I'm feeling. I am packing up. I am about to go home for the holidays in a few days here. And so it's just been really interesting as my time in this apartment in Italy is coming to a close. The first chapter of Italy is coming to a close, to just kind of reflect and feel all those feelings and thank this space that has housed me and kept me safe, and also be really excited to be home and see my people and see my parents and see my dog. So packing is always, I mean, you can tell the shelf behind me, decor was the first thing to come down, unfortunately. Still working on clothes and other stuff, of course, but moving is always an interesting experience in terms of how it forces reflection, and the space that you're in inherently changes your state of mind. And I've really been feeling that over, I guess I just started packing yesterday, so yesterday and today, and really anticipating going back home.
but also reflected on this apartment in this space, construction has been going on in my apartment since 6 a.m. and it is now almost 11 a.m. and I'm trying very hard to record this intro because I need to record it right now, in and out with the construction sounds. I hope that I get some good uninterrupted audio. I may have to re-record this, we will see. So, slight frustration there, but also a good reflection of the growth and the change that will come out of this time, and how no place is perfect. It's what you contribute to the space and the energy here that is the impact that it makes back on you. So that is all I have for you today, and I hope you feel like you are living more coherently. Until next time, love.